I'll make it even more general and say a quantity is something you can measure. It's just about anything you can measure is a quantity. It's really easier, though, to just use examples than to try to give a formal definition of a quantity. So what is an example? Who wants to, there's no limit to the number of quantities in the universe.
Atomic weight?
Yes, atomic weight is a quantity. Something you can measure, right? It's not something you've probably measured in your lifetime, but that's a good example of a quantity. Now, how's that different from a unit? What is a unit?
The unit would be like what you measure the quantity with.
That's right. Units are predefined sizes, basically, in which you measure quantities. So to use a more familiar example of a quantity, let's say length. Do you recognize that length is a quantity? You can measure it, right? But you have all kinds of choices of units to use when you measure length. You can use the silly system that Americans embarrassingly stick to, like inches and miles and rods, things like that, feet. You can use metric units, kilometers, megameters, nanometers, meters. But the point is, any given unit is a predefined size that you use to measure that quantity in. So I see a lot of people, everyone tells me that they know the difference between quantities and units, but the quizzes usually tell me otherwise. So let's just go ahead and use another example to drive it home. Who wants to give me another quantity? One we haven't mentioned, of the millions that exist. Well, that's not actually a quantity. You can measure things about your phone, but you're not measuring the phone. Now, do you mean how big it is?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that would be length. Length is one way you can measure how big it is. There are other ways as well. You could measure its volume, right? Volume is another example of a quantity. But it could be speed, you know, how fast you run is a quantity. Anything you can measure is a quantity. Yeah.
Temperature
is one. It's a good example of a quantity. Notice, though, that for any of these, doesn't matter what quantity you come up with, there are corresponding units that you can measure that quantity in. Like for temperature, you can use any of the various temperature scales. You can use degrees Fahrenheit as the unit, and so on. If it's volume, what do you have as at your disposal for units of volume in the silly system that Americans use?
Inches.
Not for volume.
Ounces.
Not ounces, but fluid ounces does qualify for volume. Ounces is weight. Cubic inches, teaspoons, acre feet. These are all volume units in the silly system. What about in the sensible system, the metric system? For volume.
Liters,
milliliters, kiloliters, and so on. Or cubic centimeters also works, cubic meters. All right, so tell me the truth. Do you have a good feel for the difference between a quantity and a unit? You don't. Okay. Now, if you think of length, this is the easiest one to understand. When you measure length, which is the thing about the sample you are measuring, that's the quantity. You can use, for instance, a ruler. That ruler is a measuring stick. And it has predefined units on it that you measure the length in. Those are the units, not the quantity. The length is what you're measuring. You're measuring it in units called centimeters or inches or whatever. Does that help? Okay. Now, it's important to truly understand that difference, because now I'm going to make it more specific. For each of those two, quantities and units, there's two categories. There are fundamental quantities and there are derived quantities. And correspondingly, since there's a correspondence between quantities and units, correspondingly there are fundamental units and derived units. So it's just a matter of distinguishing between fundamental and derived. Well, there's no limit to the number of quantities, as I've said, anything you can measure. And the vast majority of those quantities, almost all of them, are derived quantities. Fundamental quantities are quantities that are not made up of other quantities. They stand alone on their own, and there are surprisingly few of those, only like 10 in the universe. Many of which we'll mention in here. Does anyone want to guess or tell me what an example of a fundamental quantity is? We've already said some.
Temperature
is. It's a fundamental quantity. It's not made up of other things. Mass also is, yes. Any others?
Density
is not. And the reason, I'm glad you said it, because density is defined as mass per volume. Right? The amount of mass that's contained in a unit volume. So the quantity called density is made up of quantities called mass and volume. Right? It's a collection of quantities. That's why it's derived. Does that make sense? By analogy with chemistry, atoms are like fundamental quantities, and the molecules that are made out of atoms are like derived quantities. Now think about an oxygen molecule, which is two oxygen atoms. It's a molecule, but it's really only one kind of atom. There are two of them, though. So it doesn't have to be two or more different kinds of quantities, as long as there's two or more. Now, let's look at a list of some quantities in the next slide. These are important for various reasons in just about any science, including biology. Do you recognize that time is a quantity, first of all? Yeah, you can measure time, right? It's a quantity. Is it derived or fundamental? Well, it is derived if it's made up of other quantities. What is time made up of? If you're saying that it's derived, what are the quantities that time is made up of?
Minutes, seconds.
Those are units, not quantities. So time is one of the very few quantities that is fundamental. What about, by the way, speaking of fundamental quantities, if a quantity is fundamental, then whatever unit you choose, there has to be an appropriate unit for that quantity. Whatever time unit, for instance, you use, is by definition a fundamental unit because the quantity itself is fundamental. And similarly, if it's a derived quantity, then a unit of that is a derived unit. What about the next one, mass? We've already talked about mass. Actually, we've already said that it's fundamental. What is mass, though, by the way? You can't have that out. You can't have it down there. What is mass?
Mass and weight.
No, but thanks for saying that, because usually this happens. Mass and weight are often confused, but they're importantly different. No, number of atoms is a different quantity. Mass, though, is how much matter is in a sample. Not how many atoms, because atoms themselves are made up of different amount of matter. So number of particles is what you're talking about, which is an important quantity totally different from mass. So it's the amount of material in a sample. Weight, by the way, weight, is a totally different quantity. But I see how they're confused. Weight is an example of force. All forces are quantities. Not all forces are weights. Weight is the specific force due to gravity. There's other ways to have forces exerted besides gravity. Okay? But if the force is due to gravity, then that force is called a weight. And that the magnitude of that force, of that weight, depends on the amount of matter that the sample is made out of. It depends on mass. That's why they're confused by people. As a matter of fact, it leads to something that pisses me off about bathroom scales. Well, back to this silly system. I said it's embarrassing that we're hanging on to the non-metric system. 48 years ago now that I was in fifth grade when I remember my teacher telling us that that day we were going to learn the metric system and that we had to pay attention because very soon that's all we'll be using. Well, it's almost 5 decades since then and we're now no closer to using the metric system except for the scientists. Scientists throughout all over Earth use metric. Now, non-scientists over almost all of the Earth use the metric system as well. But there's 3 exceptions, and we are one of them. United States, Myanmar, and Liberia have not made the transition to the metric system, which is a shame because the metric system is so much easier than the one you've been taught. And in fact, the one you've been taught, you haven't even fully learned yet, which I'll try to demonstrate here in a minute. But anyway, mass and weight are not the same thing. Now, in a bathroom scale that's sold to Americans, since we embrace the silly system, there are usually 2 different indicators on the dial. Right? The big numbers are in what units? Pounds. Which is appropriate, because a pound is a unit of weight. And that's what you're directly measuring with that instrument. Right? When you stand on it, the force you're exerting on the springs is what's being detected. That is your weight, your force. So it should read out in units of force, which pounds are. But then, for the people who are trying to make the transition, I guess, they give you the so-called metric equivalent above that, right? Well, that's bullshit. It's not the metric equivalent. What are the units above it, above pounds? Kilograms, which are not units of weight. Kilograms are units of mass. Now, if you take that bathroom scale to the moon and stand on it, it's going to be roughly 1/6 of your weight. So the number of pounds is going to be about 1/6 of what it is down here. But it's still going to be correct on the moon, right? Because you have less weight on the moon. You're exerting less force because of reduced gravity, and therefore it's the scale is still correct if it's reading out in weight units. But it will also correspondingly tell you that you're now made up of less material because you're less massive, fewer kilograms. That's the bullshit part of it. So if a true metric equivalent, if they're going to list one, should be metric units of weight, not of mass. Does anyone know what that unit is? Scientists just abuse this all the time. They will use grams for weight and for mass, but they're not the same thing. Well, who cared a lot about gravity? What smart man? Well, yes, Newton. Newton, right? With the fable of the apple falling on his head. That's what the unit is. We've named it in his honor. The Newton is the metric unit of weight. And so that's what should appear on the top above the pounds on a bathroom scale, not kilograms. By the way, Newton is famous for a lot of things, but what did he tell us that force equals? And remember that weights are forces. Force equals what? MA, mass times acceleration. And if you write it this way, you can see that any force, including weight, is what kind of quantity? Fundamental or derived?
Fundamental.
No, it's derived because force is made up of mass and acceleration, both of which are quantities, right? These are like the atoms making up this molecule, is what I was trying to analogize. You see what I'm saying there? As a matter of fact, even acceleration just by itself is already derived, because acceleration is distance per time per time. There's three quantities in it just by itself. When you add the mass quantity, force is definitely derived, right? It's made up of four things. So that's the difference between fundamental and derived. Go ahead. Distance is fundamental, yes. And so I listed it length up there. Well, length, width, height, breadth, depth, distance. Those all mean the same thing. They're just different names for it, right? They're really all distances. The difference between two points in space is the distance. That's a fundamental quantity, and therefore any distance unit is fundamental. What about volume? Fundamental or derived? It is derived. Why? It's made up of multiple lengths. Yes. Height, width, and depth. Right? Different names for distances. It's three distances, though. This is what I was saying about the oxygen molecule. For a quantity to be derived, it doesn't have to be made up of different quantities, just two or more quantities. They can be two of the same. In this case, it's three of the same. Three distances for volume, so it's derived. And therefore, any volume unit is derived, like teaspoons, cups in the silly system, or milliliters. Force, I just already went through. That includes weight. Temperature, we earlier said, is fundamental. And over the ages, there have been dozens of different temperature scales in use. There are really only three that are in wide use still today. One of which is in the silly system. We use the Fahrenheit scale, and the units are degrees Fahrenheit. So it has the degree symbol. Now, the big part of the silliness, it's not that the system is incorrect. It's just difficult because of all these hard-to-memorize numbers. You know, like the boiling point of water in Fahrenheit. You probably know it, but what is it? Maybe you don't know it. It is 212 degrees. That's assuming one atmosphere of pressure. And what about freezing of water? 32 degrees Fahrenheit. Notice that there are 180 tick marks between 32 and 212. So 180. Well, this metric, there's actually two metric scales. One of them, though, is the centigrade scale, or Celsius, which also uses degrees, but that's why you never write degree symbol by itself, because a degree centigrade is not the same as a degree Fahrenheit. But this is the centigrade scale, meaning 100 gradations, 100 tick marks, is based on water. So the boiling point of water is defined as 100 degrees centigrade. The freezing is 0 centigrade. Well, obviously there's 100 tick marks, 100 degrees between 0 and 100. 180 for the same range in Fahrenheit. And if notice that 180 divided by 100 is 1.8. And this is why you have that 1.8 conversion factor if you've ever converted between centigrade and Fahrenheit or reverse because of that. The other metric temperature scale is called what?
Kelvin.
The Kelvin scale, which can also be called the absolute temperature scale. And it does not use degrees. So don't ever say degrees Kelvin. They are not called degrees. They are called Kelvins. And the symbol is a capital K. But it's called the absolute temperature scale because it's based on what temperature actually is, rather than based on water or anything else. Temperature is an indication of the average speed of the particles of a sample. So any given sample made out of atoms, those particles are going to be moving individually at their own speed, but even in solids, they're still moving. The average speed is just what you think it is. If you were to measure the speed of each individual particle and then divide by that number of particles, that would be the average speed. That's what temperature actually is. Well, this is the absolute temperature scale because unlike the other two scales that have a zero but you can go below it, zero on the Kelvin scale is as far as down as you can go because it doesn't make sense to go below zero when you're talking about motion, average speed of the particles, right? When they stop, you can't be below that. You can't have negative speed of particles. So it's the coldest anything can possibly be because no particles are moving. But even though Kelvins are not degrees, they're not called degrees, each Kelvin as a unit is exactly the same size as 1 degree centigrade. They're just offset from each other. So room temperature is roughly 300 Kelvins because absolute zero on the centigrade scale is about negative 273.15 degrees centigrade. That's zero Kelvins. And therefore, it's an easy conversion between centigrade and Kelvin. You just have to add 273.15 to whatever the centigrade temperature is. Okay, that is fundamental. Temperature is not made out of other quantities. And so you get the impression from this list that most quantities are fundamental, but it's not the case at all. Almost all quantities are actually derived. They're made out of combinations of the things that we're calling derived. Not all of these are fundamental. Volume is derived, force is derived. The rest of these, though, even number of particles is fundamental. How you count things, in other words. Particles can be anything. Planets, trees, humans, whatever. Well, macroscopic things, you count more or less with integers, right? 1, 2, 3, whatever. Or dozens, something like that, or maybe millions, if you have a hell of a lot of them. But when the particles that you're counting are so tiny that it takes a ridiculously huge number of them before you even see that mass of them, that collection of them, then it would be inconvenient to use dozens or integers or even millions or trillions even to count those. So when we're talking about atoms and molecules, which are that small, we use moles as units. So the quantity is number of particles. A unit of number of particles is the mole. So is dozen, by the way, right? Dozen is a unit of number of particles. But when I say dozen, that doesn't at all tell you what I have or what I've measured, right? It just tells you how many. It is simply a number. Is it a dozen eggs or a dozen planets? Similarly with mole. A mole is just a number. Like a dozen is 12. But a mole is an impressively large number. It's called Avogadro's number. And that is approximately 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd power. That's in scientific notation. That's written in scientific notation. If I wrote that in standard notation, though, it would be 6022 and then 20 more zeros. Huge number. A trillion is effectively zero compared to it. So why do we have such large numbers? Like I said, if we're counting things that are inconceivably tiny. And on the periodic table, on this version, the red numbers, which are not integers, are atomic masses. And you can think of those as having two different units. One unit that you can use for an atomic mass is the atomic mass unit. Each element is different. So, for instance, for calcium, it's 40.078. That means a single calcium atom has a mass equal to 40.078 atomic mass units, which is not really convenient for working with calcium, but that's true. You can also think of this number, though, as having units of grams per mole. So that means there are 40.078 grams of calcium in one mole of calcium atoms. And therefore, if you have a sensitive enough instrument and you very carefully measure out exactly 40.078 grams of pure calcium, that means you have one mole of calcium atoms there. 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd atoms of that. Which, consider how big a number that is, and 40 grams of calcium is not all that much, so that gives you an appreciation of just how tiny atoms are. Why it takes so many millions before we can even see them. I mean, a cell, which is invisibly small, is many, many millions of atoms in size. And we have trillions of cells in our body. Okay. Do I need to go on about any difference between fundamental and derived quantities and units? You can distinguish all four. All right. Let's then go on to the metric system, which, as I said, you can learn quickly. This is why we should have done it decades ago. You can learn it really in 15 minutes, the basics of it. It takes practice to use it well, but you can't learn the silly system in 15 minutes. And like I said, you probably haven't even learned the whole thing. For instance, going back to this scale thing where kilograms isn't mass, they should have used newtons. Well, if you are measuring mass in the metric system, you would use grams as the unit, right? What about in the silly system? What is your system's units of mass? See, you have not learned the whole thing yet, even. It's the slug, which you'll probably never use. Engineers used to use it until they realized they should be using the metric system. But the reason that the metric system is easier to learn is because it's a decimal system. Instead of having numbers all over the place that you have to memorize individually, if at all, it's all based on powers of 10. So it's really just a matter of moving decimal places. Now, speaking of powers of 10, there's such a thing called an order of magnitude. We use that phrase in science. An order of magnitude is 1 power of 10. And so if you have a dollar and you get and you increase your your money by an order of magnitude, by one order of magnitude, that means you now have $10. One order of magnitude is 10 times bigger or 10 times smaller than something. If going from a dollar to a dime would also be a one order of magnitude chain, because you have now one-tenth of what you had. So 10 times bigger or one-tenth of. That's one order of magnitude. You see what I'm saying there? Okay, well, look at the magnitude column here. These are all 10 to some number. The middle row, notice, does not have any prefix or symbol associated with it. Metric system is based on all these prefixes. And no quantity is given here because the quantity depends on what you're measuring. So, for instance, if you're measuring mass, then your quantity should be grams, because that's the metric unit of mass. But grams themselves might not be a convenient unit to use. If you're measuring the mass of the Earth, you could express it in grams, but it's going to be a huge number of grams, right? And it's inconvenient to write such huge numbers. Or if you're measuring the mass of a single atom, you could also express it in grams, but it's going to be a tediously inconvenient small number, right? 0.0000. That's a pain in the ass to write all of that. So we don't give you just one choice of units in the metric system, like gram, which is a base unit. Instead, you have your choice of other sized units that are either bigger than or smaller than the base by a certain number of orders of magnitude. Okay? The one without the prefix, though, is just the base unit. So it would be grams for mass, it would be meter for length, it would be kelvins for absolute temperature, and so on. Right? That depends on what you're measuring. But, and notice that the base has a magnitude or a numeric value of 10 to the 0. 10 to the 0 is 1. So you're not multiplying it by anything. You're keeping it at the base. But every step up, one step up in the table, is a jump of 3 orders of magnitude. 3 orders of magnitude means 10 times 10 times 10 bigger, or 1,000 times as big. Right? One order of magnitude is 10 times bigger. 2 orders of magnitude is 100 times bigger. 3 orders of magnitude is 1,000 times bigger. And that's that jump of 3 orders of magnitude is just one step in this table. That's why it's 10 to the 3rd versus 10 to the 0. And something that's 10 times, I mean, a 1,000 times bigger than the base, whatever that base unit is a kilo whatever, like a kilogram or a kilometer or kilokelvins, anything like that. All right, so you don't use kilo or mega or any of these prefixes by themselves in isolation. They're prefixes because they come before the name of the unit itself that you're using for that, that depends on the quantity. Is that all clear? Sure? All right. Whereas it's 3 orders of magnitude or 1,000 times to go one step up. Another step above that is 3 orders of magnitude above this step, which means compared to the base, it's 6 orders of magnitude, or a million times bigger. That's what mega means. Kilo means 1,000 times, or 1,000 of those. Mega means a million times, or a million of those. A megagram is equal to 1,000,000 grams. A kilogram is 1,000 grams. Okay? Notice that all of the prefixes, except one, that are above the base, use a capital letter for the whole word version and for the symbol. That's not coincidence, that's by convention. We made it that way so that you can be reminded by the capital letter that this is a prefix that makes it bigger than the base rather than smaller. So for consistency, even kilo should be capital K. And the symbol should be a capital K. Why did they not do that? Why not use capital K? Because it's already being used for kelvins, and that would be ambiguous. Otherwise, they would have. Well, correspondingly, all the prefixes that make it smaller than the unit, below the base, are lowercase letters. These are all three orders of magnitude jumps as well, though, but they're going into negative exponents. 10 to the negative third means 1 over 10 to the third, or 1/1000th. So these are all smaller. Milli means 1/1000th of. That means it takes 1,000 milligrams, for instance, just to equal 1 gram. And micro is 10 to the negative 6th. It's 1 millionth of. It takes a million micrometers to equal 1 meter. And so on. Now, most of these are straightforward, how they got the symbols, but notice that milli is M. Micro starts with an M as well, so they can't reuse M. They therefore use this symbol, which is not a U, so don't write a U. This is a mu, which has this long preceding tail below it, which is just a Greek M, by the way. That's why they already were using a version of M. Micro starts with M also, so they use the Greek version of M to stand for micro. None of these symbols, though, is ever used by itself. They just come before the symbol for the actual unit, the depending on the quantity, right? So it would be MM for micrometers, mu M for micrometers, MM for millimeters, CM for centimeters, and so on. You never write just the prefix by itself. Now, the range here is impressive because it goes all the way down to almost unimaginably tiny. Yocto is the prefix for 10 to the negative 24th. In other words, it takes 10 to the 24th power yoctograms to equal 1 gram. So that is very tiny. And all the way up to 10 to the positive 24th, which is ridiculously huge. And so that is 48 orders of magnitude overall, that range. That's wide enough for any science. Some, you know, if you're measuring planets, you need big units. You're measuring atoms, you need small units. No matter what you're measuring, it's somewhere in here. But actually, this is way wider than we care about in biology because nothing's that small or that big. So that's why in the next slide you see a similar table, but the red ones are the ones that are either too big or too small to care about in biology, and therefore you don't have to memorize the red ones. The white ones were in the previous table as well, and you have to memorize the white ones. The yellow ones, though, have been stuck in between. They weren't in the previous table. Remember I said they were three orders of magnitude jump? Well, on either side of the base itself, to give you even more convenient choices of units, we go by just one order of magnitude steps, either up or down. And so deca with a K is 10 of. A decagram is 10 grams. Hecto means 100 of. A hectosecond is 100 seconds. All right? Deci, going beneath the base with a C, be careful with deci and deca. Deci means 1/10 of. So a tenth of a gram is a decigram. And centi is 1/100th of, like a hundredth of a dollar, which is why we call it a cent. A centimeter is, it takes 100 centimeters to make a meter because each centimeter is 1/100th of a meter. Okay, so What you need to memorize are the values of these white and yellow ones and their names and symbols. But you also need to know what the symbols are and the names for the various commonly used quantities, like grams for mass, meter for length, and so on. And remember, this will be posted along as a separate link on the same page that has this recording on it. Okay. That brings us to the next major topic, which is dimensional analysis. Dimensional analysis is important for various reasons in science, only one of which I'm really going to deal with in this course, which is to use dimensional analysis for conversion problems. It's called dimensional analysis, by the way, because of units. Dimension is another name for unit. And dimensional analysis is frustratingly difficult to get students to do correctly. They just resist doing it correctly, seemingly. Most students just want to deal with numbers only, never write down any units, because, after all, only numbers are what you poke into a calculator. Well, that can easily get you the wrong answer, and besides, it's just not the right way of doing it. So I'm going to demonstrate the correct way of doing it, which is the only way that you can get full credit for demonstrating that you understand what I'm about to do. All right. Let me tell you, there is a couple errors in this slide, though. It should be 150 point miles, both up there and right here, for reasons I'll explain in a little bit. But this is a conversion problem, which means you have a measurement that's already made of some quantity. In this case, the quantity is what?
Miles or numbers?
No, those are units. Distance or length, yes. Yeah, that's the quantity. So you've already measured a quantity. You have a value in some units, right? Conversion doesn't mean you're changing the measurement. The distance is not changing here, right? When you convert, you're maintaining the measurement. You're just expressing it in different units. Is that clear? Well, a conversion problem using dimensional analysis is, mathematically speaking, is serial multiplication, meaning multiplying something by something by something over and over in a series. But you have to do this in such a way that you start out with a distance, in this case distance, it could be any other quantity, but you're starting out with a measurement, and after multiplication many times, you're ending up with the same measurement. So think about this mathematically. In math, what is the only possible way that you can start with a number, multiply it by a bunch of things, and then end up with the same number? Well, not the only way, but the easiest way.
By one.
Yes, if you multiply by the multiplicative identity, which is 1, you're not changing the value. Well, here is the serial multiplication. Each of these things in parentheses is something that's being multiplied in this process. And in math, what we call the things that get multiplied together are factors, right? Addends are added together, factors are multiplied together to produce a product. And this first factor on the left is simply what you're given originally. It's the original measurement. In this case, 150 miles, 150 point miles. And I could have written it just that way, but notice that all these other factors are expressed as fractions. So just to make it consistent, I make this one a fraction as well, simply by putting it over 1. So that's one factor, what you're given. That's what you should always start with. All of these other factors are listed as conversion factors, notice. But as you just told us, it has to equal 1 for you not to change the value by multiplying your original distance. And the distance is not changing. So that means that each of these conversion factors by itself is just another representation of 1. You can write 1 to mean 1, but there are infinitely many other representations of 1, right? Including infinitely many fractions that can equal 1. But what has to be true of a fraction if it equals 1? Well, what's an example of a fraction that equals 1?
2 over 2.
2 over 2. What's true of 2 over 2 and all the other fractions that equal 1? The numerator is equal to the denominator, right? If the numerator is equal to the denominator, then the fraction is equal to 1. They don't have to even be integers, right? 3.7 over 3.7, pi over pi. As long as they're the same and they're not 0, then the fraction equals 1 by definition. Well, that's true for every conversion factor here. The numerator is the same as the denominator, it's just expressed in different units. But since the whole conversion factor is equal to 1, what you're doing is taking the original measurement and multiplying it over and over by different versions of 1, which is why you end up with the same distance at the end, just expressed in different units. Now, does all of that make sense? Okay, well then let's do this again on the board. Or actually, I'm going to do one with different numbers just so you can get a second example. If I ask you how many this is saying, how many micrometers are in 23.2 times 10 to the 4th miles? Alright, so it's a distance-based conversion here. And also, like this example one, this involves jumping from the metric to the silly or jumping from the silly to the metric. You don't have to. You can convert from silly to silly or metric to metric, but this one involves both systems. But anyway, just like on this projected example, you always start the same way in the process, namely by writing down what you have to begin with, the measurement before, which in this case is the 23.2 times 10 to the 4th miles. And as I said, I'm going to make that into a fraction simply by putting it over 1 so that everything's a fraction. Now we know we're not done here because we're in units of miles and the answer needs to be in units of micrometers. So the very next step in all of these problems is approached exactly the same way. You got to get rid of the miles, so just make yourself an empty fraction. And don't worry about any numbers yet. You just know that you need to get rid of the miles. Right now they're on top, so you need to put miles in the bottom of this next fraction so they'll cancel. Now you can fill in the other side of the fraction, the top, with any units you want as long as you know the conversion factor. So, in this projected example, I use 760 yards per mile, which you might have memorized, or you might have memorized 5,280 feet per mile, Or you might have memorized neither because of the inconvenience of the silly system, but it is 5,280 feet per mile. One important point on this is that within one conversion factor, whatever the bigger unit is, in this case miles is bigger than feet, is always going to have the smaller number associated with it. And I usually bring up the classic joke about pizza. You know, how many slices do you want me to cut this pizza into, 8 or 6? The guy says 8 because I'm particularly hungry today. Well, that's nonsense, right? You don't get any more pizza by cutting it into 8 slices. You're just using smaller units, so there's a greater number of them. The bigger unit will always have the smaller number because these equal each other, remember. This is 1. Okay, if we stopped there, we would be in feet because the miles canceled. And that's why you need to write the units down to tell whether you're setting it up correctly and to tell when you're done. We're not done because feet is not what we're being asked for. So, same process. I need to get now rid of the feet. And I can go from feet to anything. I'm going to go to inches using the fact that 12 inches is in 1 foot. Notice once again the smaller unit gets the bigger unit gets the smaller number. Now this is important to get to inches in this case because there is one distance conversion between metric and silly that you should bother to memorize, and it involves inches and centimeters. So you need to either, if you're going from metric to silly, you need to get to centimeters so you can go to inches. If you're going from silly to metric, you need to get to inches so you can go to centimeters. And what you should memorize, inches now you need to get rid of, you go to centimeters. What you should memorize is that there are exactly, and this is why you should bother to memorize it, because this is not an approximation. This is exact. 2.54 centimeters in 1 inch. That's not rounded. You can express that as 2.54 or 2.54 with a million zeros after it. It's exact. Okay? But right here is where we make the jump between silly and metric, because the inches now cancel, and we would, if we stopped there, be in centimeters. We know we're not done though, because we're being asked for micrometers once again. So, if you're experienced with the metric system, and this is why you come to appreciate it, it's really an easy thing. You could do it in your head to go from centimeters to micrometers. But I don't want you to do that if you're not used to using the metric system. In fact, I don't want you to do it at all, because I want you to do it, demonstrate that you know dimensional analysis. And the reason for that is all of the prefixes that you have to memorize are relative to the base, not to each other. So, if you are in the metric system somewhere, like centimeters, but you're not where you need to be, like micrometers, then go from where you are temporarily to the base, which in this case would be meters. And that way you can rely on what you've memorized centi as meaning, which is 1/100th of, compared to the base. So you can say that there are 100 centimeters in 1 meter. The bigger unit gets the smaller number, notice. Everyone with me on that? Then, once you're at the base, you go from the base to where you need to be based on the question, which is micrometers. And once again, you can rely on your memorized knowledge of what micro means, which is 1/1,000,000th of. It's by far the smaller unit, so it takes 1,000,000 of those, which I'll just write as 10^6 micrometers, to equal 1 meter. If you didn't bother to write out all of these units, which is proper dimensional analysis, then you could easily, first of all, you wouldn't know whether you're done setting it up, and you also could easily flip one of these upside down. And if you do that, you're going to get a preposterous and entirely incorrect answer. That's why you do it the correct way and write the dimensions or the units out to demonstrate to yourself that you're doing it correctly, because everything cancels except the units that are supposed to be there in the answer. So do it that way. But we're not done, of course. That's just the setup. Now it's a matter of computing it, which you can do easily incorrectly if you don't use the calculator properly. What we have here is no addition and no subtraction. This is all multiplication and division, right? And multiplication and division are equal in what is called the hierarchy of mathematical operations. What that means is that you can do multiplication and division in any order you choose, and you'll still get the right answer. And so you should take advantage of that in a calculator and use only times and divided by, and then finally equals only one time. Don't hit equals and then keep doing it. You're going to run into rounding errors or other errors. But what I'm saying by any order is that you could enter this as 1 divided by 100 times 12 divided by 1 times 23.2. But it would be silly to skip around like that, right? It would equal the right answer. It's far easier to just simply work across the top with the numerators, work across the bottom with the denominators, as long as you are hitting times for all of the top numbers and divided by for all of the bottom numbers, and then equals at one time at the end, you should get the right answer. Now, when it comes to if you have to enter scientific notation like this, most calculators have a button listed as EE. The EE itself really means times 10 to the, and then you enter the power. So I would enter this individual number. You wouldn't enter times 10. You would enter 23.2 EE button 4. That puts in that number by itself. Now, if you don't have an EE button, you would enter it as 232000. Oh, I'm sorry. 00. 23200. But I just made this up and I haven't calculated this in my head. Does anyone want to do that real quickly? Is at least one person doing it? Does anyone have a calculator? So what you should write, what you should enter is 2.32 times 10 to the 4th times 5280 times 12 times 2.54 times 1,000,000 divided by 100 equals. You don't have to bother putting the ones in because they don't change anything, of course. But if there were multiple things down here, you would say divided by, divided by, divided by, and then equals. Anyone get a number yet? 3.7 what?
3.77 times 10 to the 13th.
10 to the 13th? Okay, well, does it give you anything after that second 7? What are they?
3.7658.
7658 and so on?
Yeah.
Okay. Times 10 to the 19th? 13th, okay. All right, this is what the calculator says. Just this alone. Did anyone else get the same thing, by the way, to demonstrate that that was right? This equals this. You could enter it this way or as this way. Okay, while others are checking that, let me just say that this is the only thing the calculator spits out. And that's not the answer for two reasons. One is that this is just a magnitude. Right, if you say, I want you to give me some money, and I'll say, okay, I'll give you 10. What the hell does that mean? 10 cents? $10 million? There's no units. It's just a magnitude. Right? That's not the right answer. It only makes sense if you include with the magnitude the dimension, which is the units. So that's one reason why this by itself is wrong. The units are micrometers, so remember to write them, whatever they are in the problem. But it's still wrong because this number has more resolution than we're allowed to use. It has more significant figures, in other words, than we are allowed to use in science. And I'll talk about resolution in a minute, but we can't use more significant figures than we started with. Now, there are all kinds of numbers in these conversion factors, but none of those constrains us with respect to significant figures because all of those are exact. Like I said about 2.54, you can write as many zeros as you want because it's exact. Same thing with 5280, 0.0000. They all have infinitely many significant figures. So they're not constraining us. You have to go with what has the fewest significant figures, which is what you started with here. This has three significant figures, right? 2, 3, 2. So that means our answer has to be rounded so that it has three significant figures, and that's why you correctly rounded it before. That means this place has to be either kept the same or rounded up. In this case, since the 5 is there, this 6 becomes a 7, and these disappear. Okay? Now it has three significant figures. As long as you write the times 10 to the 13th, which is important. Micrometers. Now that might seem like the end, but actually there is one important step that a lot of students skip, which is to finally ask yourself, does this make any sense? It's an important step because, especially when you're working with huge or small numbers, does it make sense that there are a hell of a lot of micrometers in this many miles? Yes, you're starting with a big number of miles. A mile by itself is a lot of micrometers. So your answer should be really big. If this is times 10 to the negative 5th, it doesn't pass that final test of making any sense. So go back and look at your setup. Okay, that's dimensional analysis. Do you think you can do one of those on your own? Maybe not right this moment, but do you think you will be within a week?
Yeah.
Based on how I've described it. Okay. Yeah. This one? Because micrometers means 1/1,000,000th of a meter. And 10 to the 6th is a million. Since a single micrometer is 1/1,000,000th of a meter, it takes 1,000,000 of micrometers to equal 1 meter. I could have written it out as 1,000,000,000. It's just easier. And that actually segues nicely into this next topic, which is about standard notation versus scientific notation, which I've already been using. And this brings up the error I told you that's in this original slide. There are two reasons for using scientific notation instead of standard notation. The 150, 150, that's standard notation. This 23.2 times 10 to the 4th, scientific notation. Even though it's usually, it would be better to say 2.32 times 10 to the 5th, because it's usually, we only have one integer before the decimal place, by convention. But anyway, this is scientific notation, this is standard notation. There's two reasons for using scientific notation. one of them is not nearly as important as the other. The less important reason is just convenience. Scientific notation is more convenient when you're talking about huge numbers or tiny numbers, because it's a pain in the ass to write all the zeros, whether it's 0.0000 or some number 00000 trailing zeros. They're both a pain in the ass. So it's just a shorthand notation for convenience. But by far the more important reason that to use scientific notation is to eliminate ambiguity with respect to how many significant figures you're looking at. Now, in a number like 121, there is no ambiguity. That's standard notation, and since these are all non-zero digits, every one of them is significant. So there's three significant figures in 121. But not 150. You have a trailing zero there. And trailing zeros are ambiguous. You don't know whether they're significant or not. All right? Therefore, there's two ways to write this number in scientific notation. If the zero actually is not significant, just the one and the five are, then you would write that as 1.5 times 10 to the second. On the other hand, if the zero actually is significant, which you can't tell from this version, then in scientific notation you would write it as 1.50 times 10 to the second. The calculator recognizes those as the same number, but they're not in terms of significant figures. The point here is that there's no ambiguity with scientific notation, because whatever comes before the times 10 tells you unambiguously how many significant figures there are. It doesn't matter whether they're zeros or not. However many there are, that's how many significant figures there are. This has two, this has three. You can't tell in standard notation. That clear? Now, just to make some meaning to significant figures, it depends on what you're able to meaningfully measure. You know, if I measure your height with a stick that has centimeter marks, but that's it, just centimeters, chances are you're not going to be exactly some number of centimeters tall. And so I can tell that you're between 130, 940, whatever. But using that instrument, I have no scientific justification for saying, it looks like 139.7. I don't have enough resolution to be able to tell that. So I have to report it as either 139 or 140. Right? I don't have significance at that next digit. Similarly with 150. This was 150 miles. If you can imagine a ridiculous measuring tape that the only tick marks are 10 miles apart, then that zero wouldn't have any significance, right? Because all I can measure to is the nearest tens of miles. 15 tick marks would be 150 miles. I wouldn't be able to tell the difference between 150 and 151. On the other hand, if I was using a measuring stick where the tick marks are 1 mile apart, then I could tell the difference between 150 and 151. And in that case, 150 would have three significant figures. Is that clear? Okay, well, that is what the major reason for using scientific notation is. It tells you exactly, whether they're zeros or not, how many significant figures that value has. And that transitions nicely, that slideshow is over, into the final part of the performance, the encore of sorts. And that is to distinguish three important definitions. Those are accuracy, precision, and resolution. I'm sure you've heard these terms before, maybe even have learned the difference. Does anyone want to tell me what accuracy is?
Accuracy
These all have to do with measurements, by the way. But what is accuracy? Yeah.
How close you got to the had like approximation, but like how close you got?
Not approximation. How close you got to the truth. Accuracy is closeness to the true value, whatever that is. You know, any given measurement, there is a true value, right? That you're trying to get by measuring it. You're going to have some error, so you're not going to be maybe right on that truth, but there is a true value, and how close you are to it is the accuracy. And that makes sense when you're talking about just a single measurement. Every individual measurement can have accuracy, is what I'm saying. A lot of textbooks use the very good analogy of throwing a dart at a dartboard to represent the taking of a measurement, where the very center of the board represents the true value, and the throwing of the dart represents the taking of the measurement. Right? The dart can land anywhere. Well, if it lands very close to the center of the board, that is highly accurate. If it lands on the wall, not accurate. Low accuracy. Precision is the next one. And here, precision doesn't really make sense in terms of one measurement. Precision has to do with repeatability of an instrument's measurements. Now, to use a scale as an example again, you can put anything you want on a scale to make a measurement, but you could also just keep using the same sample and weighing it over and over, right? The sample's not changing. So you should expect to get the same measurement each time, right? Well, you will if the instrument has high precision. If it's a low precision instrument, even though the sample isn't changing, you'll get different values on repeated measurements. And so in the dart scheme, that's analogous to throwing multiple darts, a set of three, let's say. If you get a tight grouping of those darts, that represents high precision. But notice that those darts don't have to land necessarily close to the bullseye. It can be a tight grouping off on the wall. That's high precision and low accuracy. And as a matter of fact, you could even have low precision and high accuracy, even though it's more rare. You could not even hit the board, but throw a triangle on the wall that is centered right exactly on the middle. So the average of those three measurements would be right on the truth, accurate but low precision. But obviously what we strive for in science with any instrument is high accuracy and high precision. And the final one of those three is resolution, which I've already was getting at. I was using the word resolution when I was talking about significant figures. Resolution is a noun. The verb form is resolve. To resolve means to discriminate. And discriminate means to tell the difference between. Right? Like if we have sex discrimination, we're telling apart males from females. When, even though we can, we should pretend that we can't tell the difference, right? That's why socially discrimination has a bad connotation, because it's something we want to avoid. But in science, discrimination simply means being able to tell that two different things are in fact two different things, to tell them apart. A visual example of that would be to put two marks on the board up there, separated by some distance. And if you stand close enough to those, your eyes and your brain can resolve them, which means you can tell that they are two distinct points. You can tell them apart. You have high enough resolution at that distance to tell them apart. If you stand back farther and farther, though, eventually there will become a distance at which you can't tell them apart. It will look like one dot to your eyes. So you're no longer able to resolve them. It becomes lower resolution, just like pixelating. You know, when we don't want to show nakedness on American television, they make them large pixels that have lower resolution, and you can't tell anything that's going on inside of them. You just like having to round a number up to the next bigger one. That's a loss of resolution. In instruments like a scale, for instance, resolution you can tell by how many significant figures there are. Using a scale once again as an example, if I tell you to stand on a bathroom scale and report your weight to me, you'll give me some however many pounds the instrument tells you. And if I say, just keep standing there, because now I'm going to hand you this postage stamp, and I want you to tell me the combined weight of you and this postage stamp, it's going to be the same number, right? Because a bathroom scale doesn't have high enough resolution to resolve the difference in weight between you and you plus the stamp. So it rounds it up to your weight, basically, or rounds it down. But if you were to use a very high resolution scale, there would be two different numbers that pop out. Your weight and the combined weight of you and the stamp. They would be different values because of higher resolution. That's why we can't take more resolution that the calculator will offer us than what we started with. It's really just nonsense, anything that comes in the decimal places after that last significant figure. That's why you have to do what we've been doing up here. All right, any questions about anything? I know it's a lot to sit through, but if you really either falsely or truly have convinced yourself that you understand this stuff and you'll know how to do all of this by next week, you're free to leave. If you want to meet with me still while we're here and do anything else or explain more, I can hang around for a while. It's up to you. But that's all the material I have.